Now, according to Surrey Police Chief Norm Lipinski, there have been at least 35 cases of suspected extortion in Surrey this year. And remember, we are just 27 days into this new year. And over the weekend, anti-extortion protests took place at the intersection of King George Boulevard and 88th Avenue. One of the things protesters were asking for was stand your ground gun laws, something we've heard about in the United States. Gary Purewall was one of the organizers of the rally.
No, that's why we're requesting the government to provide stand-on-ground castle laws. People can protect themselves with gun licenses and have proper protection at home. Because if somebody is shooting in your house, on your property, how are you going to protect yourself? Like, what else people can do? Like, home is your sanctuary. Like, this is where you live, and that something is violated. And how do you go forward from this, right?
That is Gary Purewall, an organizer of the anti-extortion rally that happened in Surrey on Sunday. Our next guest can give us some context on gun laws in this country. Rob Danu is a criminal defense lawyer, a founding partner at Danu Dhaliwal Law Group, and a member of British Columbia's King's Council. Good morning to you, Rob.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thanks for being with us. Firstly, as somebody who works in Surrey, how are you feeling about the numbers you've just heard? According to Norm Lipinski, 35 cases of suspected extortion so far in the 27 days of this year.
Well, I think that we're feeling that we are in a crisis, contrary to what the Assistant Commissioner Brewer said and then later walked back those statements. But this is really unprecedented territory. To have this type of extortion threats, and you said 35 incidents in a very new year, is unprecedented.
Do you personally know anybody who's been targeted?
Well, yes, we deal in this area, and we do have a clientele in this area, and there's a lot of fear on the streets.
And what are if somebody comes to you and says, you know, I'm being targeted in this extortion attempt, you know, I need your help as a lawyer, what can you do? Where do you point them?
It's really tough. It's really tough because you are balancing legal and life advice. You have, on the one hand, a police force that is having some difficulty dealing with this issue, as we see that most of these shootings are unsolved. On the other hand, you have to balance the safety interests of your clients. So you're really wondering, if I point them to the police, is that going to be helpful or hurtful? But of course, once again, we have to direct them towards law enforcement to see what they can do, if anything.
And what do you make, then, of anti-extortion protesters who are advocating for, you know, stand your ground gun laws in Canada? I mean, I suppose you can understand, you know, the fear that they're living with and how they feel about the situation. But is that a step too far, do you think?
It's a very normal reaction, and I can completely understand why individuals would have a concern and why they'd want to move towards these stand-your-ground laws or this castle doctrine that we see in the United States. Mm-hmm. That being said, what this is a reaction. It's a fearful reaction because the police have not been able to fill that gap with regard to the safety concern. So in terms of the castle doctrine that we see in the United States, we know statistically that really it's ineffective in terms of reducing safety concerns, and in fact, it actually increases safety concerns.
And explain to me, you know, why Canadian gun laws are, of course, very different from gun laws in the United States. Would anything like a stand your ground law or a castle doctrine even be possible in Canada?
It's highly unlikely politically that it would be possible. We have a totally different gun culture in Canada. And what the stand your ground laws arise from is back in 2005 in Florida, we had an expansion of gun rights. And now 35 plus states have these stand your ground laws, but they're very intertwined with the gun culture in the United States. Politicians didn't talk to experts and say, well, what is going to make people safer? This was simply a political expansion of gun rights.
Right. And so, again, we have very different gun laws in Canada. Just you're familiar with those laws. Who can possess a gun in this country?
Well, in this country, there's a very stringent process. So there's a background check, there's criminal record checks that are done. The chief firearms officer is going to look at your background, even if you don't have a criminal record, say if there's been red flags where police have been called, there's been domestic disturbances. So there's a very stringent process in terms of possessing guns. The other issue is that we now have a handgun freeze in Canada. So even if we had this stand your ground type laws in Canada, individuals can no longer buy guns. Just individuals who already own handguns can have handguns. So you can only buy long arms now.
Okay. And if somebody has a handgun at home, what's it supposed to be used for? I mean, is it for target shooting? Is it for collecting? What would anybody do with a handgun in this country?
You've hit the nail on the head. Those are the two purposes you can have a handgun. It is for collecting or for target shooting. And there's very stringent laws in terms of how you can transport them. And usually it's simply from your residence to the target range and back.
And I have a friend who is a skeet shooter, and he has two shotguns, and they are locked in a safe in his house, and the ammunition is locked in a different safe in a different location.
Absolutely. You're actually not allowed to have a loaded handgun in your house. There's very stringent laws in terms of how you can store those handguns as well, so that the safety concerns of having a firearm in your house are reduced.
So then from a legal standpoint, is something like a Castle Doctrine or a standard ground law even possible in this country, given the restrictions we have on guns?
It's highly unlikely. So it is possible that if there was the political will, but there simply is not going to be the political will. And also in terms of safety concerns, you know, the statistics clearly show if you have a firearm in your house, you're more likely to escalate any situation. The fact of the matter is when individuals come into your house, they're typically searching for property, not people.
Right.
And if you pull a handgun on them, they're going to possibly escalate that situation where you're going to get hurt as well.
These extortionists have been shooting at businesses, and in some cases, you know, shooting up homes and vehicles and so on. Where are those firearms coming from?
Well, those firearms, well, yeah, even the chief of various police forces have been clear about this, contrary to what the politicians are saying, that 90%+ of these firearms come from south of the border. They're smuggled into this country. So typically, it's not law-abiding gun owners whose firearms are being used in these incidents.
Right. And so how come we're not catching these things at the border?
Well, that's a very good question. We now have this gun buyback program. So there's only so much political capital that can be expended when it comes to gun crimes.
Right.
Right now, we're expending that capital to buy back guns from law-abiding owners. And this is a program that's going to cost probably over $1 billion. Now, it's going to be ineffective because we know that those firearms that are being used are actually smuggled into the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So if you actually took that political will and that money and capital and put it at the border, $1 billion, to stop that smuggling, you'd probably be in a better position.
Rob, you are seeing what's happening on the ground in Surrey firsthand. You've spoken with people who have been targeted. You may or may not have clients who have been targeted. What do you see as a step forward in this? What needs to be done here?
The big difference between Canada and the United States is simply the amount of resources that they have to expend with regard to their investigative agencies. So if we really want to deal with this, we need to put a lot of time and money and intelligence in terms of determining who these people are and how we can actually learn more about them so we can stop them in advance.
I guess that's easier said than done.
Well, that's the problem. It takes time and money. So this is a problem that's on the streets right now, and people are up in arms, and rightfully so. They're very concerned about their safety. But to gather that type of intelligence, you have to make inroads into these groups, which requires, undercover work, surveillance, wiretapping, all sorts of investigative techniques to actually infiltrate and gain knowledge about who these individuals are.
Do you think that Surrey would have been at more of an advantage right now when it comes to investigative power had the RCMP remained the police force of jurisdiction in Surrey?
That's really tough to say. I can't say that the RCMP is a national force, so they do have resource to greater resources on a national level. And we know that this is a national issue. It's not just happening in British Columbia. It's happening elsewhere as well. However, and the other problem is that oftentimes these municipal forces work in silos. They're not communicating with each other. So certainly that is something that should be looked into.
All right. Rob, very good to hear you this morning. Thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure.